ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, entitled Divinity and Divine Service, text number 22. Ato vaikavayo nityam bhaktim paramaya muda vasudeve bhagavati urvanti atma prasadanim. A translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Certainly, therefore, since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, with great delight, because such devotional service is enlivening to the self. Purport. The speciality of devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is specifically mentioned herein. Lord Sri Krishna is the Swayam Rupa, personality of Godhead, and all other forms of Godhead, beginning from Sri Baladev, Sankarshan, Vasudeva, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, and Narayan, and extending to the Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, Leela avatars, Yuga avatars, and many other thousands of manifestations of the personality of Godhead, are Lord Sri Krishna's plenary portions and integrated parts. The living entities are separated parts and parcels of the personality of Godhead. Therefore, Lord Sri Krishna is the original form of Godhead, and He is the last word in the transcendence. Thus, He is more attractive to the higher transcendentalists who participate in the eternal pastimes of the Lord. In the forms of the personality of Godhead other than Sri Krishna and Baladev, there is no facility for intimate personal contact, as in the transcendental pastimes of the Lord at Brajabhumi. The transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna are not merely accepted, as argued by some less intelligent persons. His pastimes are eternal and are manifested in due course once in a day of Brahmaji, as the sun rises on the eastern horizon at the end of every 24 hours. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiltam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Certainly, therefore, since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, with great delight, because such devotional service is enlivening to the self. So in this second chapter of first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Divinity and Divine Service, we have just concluded a series of verses which described the different stages of devotional service, beginning from Shraddha and leading up to Prema. So the entire process of devotional service was described, how one gains faith by the mercy of devotees, and when that faith becomes solidified, one renders devotional service in this way under the authority of a spiritual master, and one's anarthas or all contaminations are cleansed away, and one rises to the higher stages of devotional service, ultimately leading to prema bhakti. So here in this verse says, certainly therefore. So therefore means they're concluding all the previous verses. So mentioned that all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to the personality of Godhead Shri Krishna. So it's so from this verse we can see that devotional service is actually an eternal activity, and it's being rendered by transcendentalists or devotees, basically. So devotional service is not something which was started by Srila Prabhupada or 5,000 years ago got started, but devotional service is an eternal activity, and it has been going on since time immemorial. So it's not like a new thing, and we see there are devotees since time immemorial, they have been rendering devotional service. It's not that only now it's happening. So we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a Purana, or which presents histories of the universe in relationship to the Supreme Lord. So we see that Srimad Bhagavatam is not necessarily in chronological order, but we find various pastimes of the Lord in connection with his devotees from time immemorial. So you have the pastime of like Prahlad Maharaj. This is in some other yuga or some other day of Brahma. So, but even then, Prahlad Maharaj was rendering devotional service. In fact, this is that verse. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So we can see that devotional service has been going on since time immemorial. In fact, from the beginning of creation, devotional service has been going on. When Mahavishnu, he glanced over the material creation and the universes came out from the pose of his body, he entered as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And then from his lotus-like navel, this stem sprouted. On top of that was Brahma. So Brahma was engaged in austerity, and he also got the instruction. He was looking for the source of his creation, and then he got the instruction to perform penance. Now that penance is actually devotional service. So he got the instruction to perform devotional service. So you can even see right from the beginning of creation, devotional service has been going on. So it's not like a new activity, because that's the constitutional position of the living entity. So in the material world, it seems that devotional service is like is not the thing to do, because most of the people are not doing it. If you see 99% or even more than that of the population is actually not engaged in devotional service. They're engaged in pleasing their senses. But that doesn't mean we are in minority. Actually, devotees are in majority. As is described in the second canto, that of the opulences of the Lord, 3/4 of the opulences of the Lord are manifest in the spiritual world. And 1/4 is the material creation. So that 1/4 is actually the material creation, what we see around us. So though this material creation seems to be very huge, and it seems like this is the all in all, but actually there is something beyond it. There is the spiritual realm behind, beyond this. There is the Brahma Jyoti, and then there is the spiritual worlds, where 3/4 of the living entities are residing, and they are actually performing devotional service. So our movement is not in minority. Though in the material world, it seems we are in minority, but actually our numbers are far greater. But in the material world, those living entities are situated who are forgetful of the constitutional position. So Krishna has three, we say Satchidananda. Krishna has three energies are divided into three, like Sandini, Samvit and Haladini. So Sandini is his aspect of eternity, Samvit is aspect of knowledge, and Haladini is his bliss potency. So the material world is a manifestation of the Sandini energy of the Lord, eternity, but it is only 1/4. So in whoever situated in the material world, we are subjected to death. So therefore we are not eternal. We do not experience these three potencies of the Lord fully. So because we are limited by death, by nature we are sat, eternal. But in the material world there is death. Then chit meaning knowledge. So then there's always fear. So we're always fearful of what's next, or fearful of the unknown. So we're always in the state of ignorance. And then our bliss is actually limited by old age and disease. So in other words, wherever there is birth, death, old age and disease, one cannot actually experience real happiness. It's not possible. There are these four limitations, or these four limiters, which are limiting our real happiness, are stopping us from experiencing a real constitutional position or happiness, which is Satchidananda. But in the spiritual world, it is a realm of deathlessness. There's freedom from old age and disease, and there's no fear at all. So we see in the material world there are different gradations of these things. So we are situated on the Martya Loka. So material world is also, the universe is structured in, there's a higher planetary system, there's the middle, and then there's the lower planetary system. So we are on Martya Loka. So here, this is the abode of births, deaths, old age and disease. Of course, in the higher realms, death is there, but old age and disease is practically not there. And fear is also less. But still, one has to experience birth and one has to experience death. And there is some degree of fear. But in the spiritual world, all these things are actually not existing. And their living entities are situated rendering devotional service. And therefore, they are in the vast majority. So here, in the material world, basically it's mentioned that the spiritual world is the abode of those who are free from sex life. So, in the material world, we are shackled by the chains of sex life. So that is the, these are the invisible chains which are actually binding us to this material world. So to the degree we are free, one who is free from like sex desire is 50%, 75% liberated. So these chains are actually invisible shackles that are actually binding us. And the whole system of Varnashram is actually meant to gradually detach oneself from matter. Because when one engages in sex life and the products of sex life, one becomes more and more attached to the body. And then that leads to further births. And as a result, one has to suffer birth, death, old age and disease. And in this way, we remain stuck in the 1/4 creation of the Lord. So, it's mentioned that since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, with great delight, because such devotional service is enlivening to the self. And there are so many examples of devotees. Lord Brahma, Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, we even see the Pandavas, they were also rendering devotional service. Queen Kunti, our entire parampara is full of devotees rendering devotional service. And devotional service is actually rendered in any kind of circumstance. It is beyond any material circumstances. And it's actually only mentioned, as it's mentioned here, that Kurvanti Atma Prasadanim. That prasadanim means that which enlivens. So in other words, devotional service can only truly enliven the living entity. No other activity can give satisfaction to the self. So it's described that there are two kinds of path. There's the pravritti marg and there's the nivritti marg. So there's the path of sense enjoyment, or to fulfill your immediate needs. And then there's the nivritti marg, or the path of renunciation. So we see that in fact the living entity cannot be in a state of renunciation always. The living entity has to possess something at any given point of time. Whether it is possessing some commodity or some ideas, or the living entity has to possess something. So if we are not engaged in devotional service, we will be actually seeking for lower kinds of pleasures. But those who have a taste of devotional service, then they can renounce lower kinds of pleasures. And we see that even in our sampradaya, all the acharyas, materially speaking, they were impoverished, but they had some other higher kind of wealth. This is an example of Raghunath Das Goswami. He left everything. He was from such a wealthy family, but then he joined the company of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he was getting something higher. And we even see the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They were living very, very austerely and simply. Materially speaking, they didn't have anything. The Goswamis were living under every tree, one night under one tree, then another tree, because they actually had a higher kind of wealth. And even Sanatan Goswami, he made this point. Sanatana Goswami had a valuable touchstone, but it was lying in the bin. And then, so one person came to Sanatana Goswami and said, you know, he saw that valuable touchstone and he asked him, could he take it? And Sanatana Goswami said, yeah, you can take it if you like. So he took it, and then after a while, a thought came to his mind that if it's so valuable, why did he leave it in the bin? So he thought he must be having something more valuable. So then that person went to Sanatana Goswami and asked him, what is the real treasure you have? Because if this was a real treasure, you wouldn't have left it in the bin. If something is dear to us, we don't leave it in the bin. You know, we usually lock it away or nicely preserve it or keep it. So then Sanatana Goswami actually gave him the holy name of the Lord. And he said that this is actually the real treasure. So we can see that actually the living entity can never be in a state of renunciation. The living entity has to possess something. So the question is, what are we possessing? But if we are after material possessions, that cannot really enliven the self. Because by nature, we are spirit soul. By nature, we are spirit. And we can only experience true happiness with a member of the same species. But when we come in contact with matter, that is an incompatible situation. Therefore, we cannot experience true pleasure. So rasas or spiritual or tastes are exchanged between members of the same species. But when the spirit is in contact with matter, that's not a very compatible situation, and therefore it cannot result in true happiness. So Krishna is the supreme spirit and we are the minute spirit. So when we get in touch with Krishna and when we in a relationship with Krishna, then we can actually experience true happiness, which enlivens the self. So devotional service is actually an activity of the spirit soul. Whereas in the material world, people are looking for happiness through matter. So that is actually a material disease, that we are seeking these tastes through the manipulation of matter. So we come to the material world with the tendency to lord it over others. So therefore we are put in this, Krishna has to kindly make this arrangement so that we can fulfill our desire to lord it over others. In other words, we want to play the part of God. We want to play the role of God. So Krishna has to place us in a situation where we can play God, or we can act like God. So, but then Krishna has to put us in the material energy. And then the material energy, because we are minute by nature, the material energy, though it is inferior to us, but because it is much more powerful, because we are only part and parcel, we are very tiny, it has the potency to cover us. So when we come in contact with matter, it cannot actually truly satisfy us, because we are not in touch, because the pleasure is exchanged between members of the same species. So we see we cannot find pleasure from matter. You know, though people think they can find pleasure in matter, that's why people buy so many products and everyone is into technology, this and that, or buy a new car, or new phone, or new computer, or new clothes, different. But they're actually trying to derive a taste or pleasure from dead matter. But it's actually not possible. And even people know to some degree. So therefore, they try to find happiness in relationships. But those happiness, that relationship is based, because it is based on the bodily concept of life, again, it cannot give any true happiness. So the real happiness is between the members of the same species, specifically between when the part and parcel serves the complete whole. Then there can be real satisfaction in relationships also, amongst human beings. But if that service to Krishna is missing, if Krishna is not the center of the relationship, then there cannot be any true happiness. Because then it's based on the bodily concept, bodily or mental concept of life. So, devotional service, as was described in this chapter, Savai Pumsam Parodharmo Yato Bhakti Radoksaje. So that devotional service has to be performed without any ulterior motive in mind, without any desire for fruitive activities or mental speculations. That is pure devotion. And it is an activity which is done favorably for the pleasure of the Lord. It is directed towards the Lord, but has to be done with a favorable intent. So actually this pure devotional service can really satisfy the soul, but when that pure devotional service is adulterated with these motivations, it becomes contaminated. And therefore, to that degree, it cannot satisfy the self. So even we see, even in relationship to us, we always keep in account, if somebody is rendering service to us, we always see the motivation behind that. What is the motivation? If someone is glorifying you, we always... Why is that person glorifying? What's the motivation? Is it really appreciating, or there's a motive behind them? They want something. So we always see the motive. Or if someone is despising us or defaming us, we are seeing the motivation why they're doing it. Or if someone is criticizing us or correcting, we're always seeing the motivation. Is it to lord it over us? Is it done out of false ego, or is it done, you know, to help us? So we're always seeing the motivation. So even when we render service to Krishna, Krishna is always seeing the motivation behind a service. More than the service performed, he's looking at with what motive we are doing the service. It's like sometimes, you know, if you go to India, Vrindavan, you go to Lohi Bazaar, and there, you know, the shopkeepers will chant Hare Krishna. They'll say, when you're walking, they'll say, Hare Krishna, Jai Prabhupada, you know. When they see an ISKCON devotee, they'll chant the Maha Mantra. But we know why they're chanting the Maha. Immediately we know the motivation. The motivation is that they want to sell the product. They want to sell some cloth to us, or, you know, whatever it is in that shop. So that's the motivation. So similarly, when we are performing devotional service or we are chanting a japa, Krishna is seated within the heart as the Paramatma. So though we could fool anyone else, but we cannot actually fool Krishna. Because Krishna seated in our heart, he really knows what our motivation is. So Krishna knows what, but Krishna wants to actually see that we are serving him free from any motivations. And that, when we do that kind of devotional service, that actually enlivens the self. So we have to aspire to come to that level. So we see even in the prayers of Queen Kunti. Queen Kunti is actually an acharya, and she has composed these wonderful prayers. So this was after the Pandavas. Krishna was about to go back to I think Dwarka, and then an Ashwatthama had released the Brahmastra weapon targeted in the womb of Uttara to kill Maharaj Parikshit. And when Krishna, as the Paramatma, saved Maharaj Parikshit, then Queen Kunti and the Pandavas, they came to the Lord, and Queen Kunti recited his wonderful prayers. And there she actually shows the ideal of devotional service. That one actually performs devotional service under... basically, devotees are... perform devotional service under any circumstance. And she mentions that how they were put into calamities year after year. And especially she gives the example of the Pandavas, how, because the Pandavas, the Maharaj Yudhishthira was, he was supposed to inherit the throne, but because Duryodhan, he wanted to inherit the throne, so he played all kinds of foul means to take away their property or to unlawfully inherit. So they were tried to poison, like Bhima was poisoned once. He was given a cake which was full of poison, and when he had that cake, he was thrown in the lake, tied and thrown in the lake. But then Krishna protected him. So the point is, to the degree we depend on the mercy of the Lord, to that degree the Lord actually gives His protection. And then after that, they were put in a house which was made of shellac, and it was set ablaze. But again, by the will of the Lord, Vidura sent a messenger and said, okay, this house is made of shellac, so dig a tunnel and come out. And then by the will of the Lord, they escaped. And then Draupadi was attempted, the Kauravas attempted to strip her naked, but again Krishna protected. And then the cannibal Hidimba Rakshasa, he tried to eat the Pandavas, and Bhima fought him. And then on top of that, then they had to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra. So the Pandavas were actually put into distress, externally speaking. They were put into calamities one after the other. But that actually, because of that, they actually took more shelter of the Lord. And then after that, the five sons of, Draupadi, they were killed. And then on top of that, a Brahmastra was fired again to kill Maharaj Parikshit. So they were actually, one after the other, another difficulty was placed, another challenge was placed. But Queen Kunti actually shows the standard of devotional service, where they were actually unwavering in the devotional service, and they actually took more shelter of the Lord by remembering Him. And in fact, Queen Kunti, she was praying for more calamities, because when we are put into circumstances where we are forced to remember the Lord, then by doing that, we can actually cross over the ocean of material existence much quicker, because we actually remembering the Lord means you're breaking the knot of material attachment. And as it's mentioned here, that transcendentalists have been rendering service to the personality of Godhead Shri Krishna since time immemorial. So devotees always render service to the Bhagavan aspect of the Lord. So as we know, there's Brahmayati, Paramatmayati, Bhagavaniti, Shabdayati. There's three aspects. So devotees render service to the Bhagavan aspect, which includes the other two aspects. But even in that, they're specifically attracted to the two-armed form of Krishna, Shyam Sundar. So Krishna is actually the avatari. So the Lord has two kinds of expansions. He has His personal expansions, and then He has His separated expansions. So we living entities are His separated expansions. So as is mentioned in this verse, there's from the Lord first expands Lord Baladev, and then Sankarshan, Vasudev, Aniruddha and Pradyumna, then the second quadruple, then Narayan, and then the Purushavatars. So these are all the expansions of the Lord, and all of them are actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not that one of them is not God. They all are God, but they actually exhibit different degrees of the qualities of the Lord. So when Krishna descends, he comes through Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, but that doesn't mean he's any less in his position. So when Krishna descends, actually all the incarnations of the Lord also descend with him. They are within him. In fact, all the demons are killed by Lord Vishnu. So when all the demons are killed, Krishna does not kill them personally, but the Lord descends with all of his incarnations. So, but that doesn't mean that Krishna is, that the other incarnations are less than him. So we see like Dattatreya, he exhibited the quality of He, Sankhya philosophy, right? Gyan. Yeah. So, and we see, like, then there is there's Lord Buddha, who is an empowered incarnation of the Lord. So he basically came to delude the atheist. So he established the moral principles, and he tricked everyone in performing devotional service. So the different incarnations of the Lord exhibit different qualities. But that doesn't mean they are not God. Example is given of the powerhouse. So the powerhouse has all the potencies, but it is manifest to different degrees. Like in the light globe, it's not manifesting the full potency of the powerhouse. But that doesn't mean the powerhouse has less potency. The powerhouse still has its full potency. Depending on the receptacle, it can manifest to a certain degree. So the Lord Shri Krishna, when he comes, he manifests all his qualities in full. So, as is mentioned here, that when we have a relationship with Krishna, there is more facility for intimate personal contact. Whereas with the other incarnations of the Lord, that facility is not there. So we see, like, Lord Ram, doesn't mean that, you know, Lord Ram also had his babyhood pastimes. He also, you know, though he's unborn, he took birth, and then he grew, he performed his babyhood pastimes, but he was in the role of a kshatriya or a king. So then he was performing his babyhood pastimes with a limited number of devotees. Whereas we see with Krishna, when he took birth to Vasudev and Devaki, but immediately he was transferred to Rajabhumi. So then he accepted his foster father Nanda and his mother Yashoda. And then he had so many elder gopis with which he performed his childhood pastimes and gopas. And he had unlimited cowherd friends. And he performed his pastimes with the cows, with the different animals also. So in this way, there is more facility for intimate personal contact. And then Krishna had billions of gopis, unlimited gopis. He performed rasalila with. Whereas we see with Lord Ramchandra, the facility for intimate contact is quite limited. And the Lord is even more merciful than Lord Ram, because he gives this opportunity for intimate contact. Therefore, he is more merciful. Whereas Lord Ram is in the position of a kshatriya, so there is this awe and reverence comes in between. So if there is someone in a position of authority, there is always this awe and reverence which will come in. It's quite natural. So but with Lord Ram, therefore, there is this dasya relationship. Whereas with Lord Krishna, there is, of course, Sakya Vatsalya is also there with Lord Ram, but with only a few devotees. But with Lord Krishna, all these five are manifest to an unlimited degree. And also Krishna's form is even more beautiful than all the other forms of Godhead. It's not that other forms of Godhead are less beautiful. So they are also beautiful. They are also attractive. If we see the form of Narayan, as it's depicted in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is actually very, very beautiful. He's wearing dazzling garments. It's a beautiful form. He's wearing the Srivatsa jewel, the Kaustubha jewel, the Srivatsa mark, and got a beautiful, nicely structured body, earrings, and a golden helmet, and a beautiful smile and lips. So like that, it's not that the form of Lord Narayan is not beautiful. It's beautiful, but the form of Krishna is even more beautiful. So Krishna comes in his two-armed form, playing the flute in Vrindavan, garlanded by basically forest flowers or forest leaves. His garland is made out of that. So it is this awe and reverence is not there, and the beauty is even more, because Krishna has all the attributes of God in full, whereas in the other forms there's a certain percentage given. Like for Lord Narayan it is 93%, or there's some percentage. For Lord Shiva there's some percentage. Then for Lord Brahma is 78% of the attributes. So we jivas can possess up to 78% of the attributes of Krishna in quality, not in. So in this way we see that the form of the Lord is very special, and therefore different devotees have a relationship with different incarnations of the Lord. It's not that everyone has their relationship with Krishna. So some devotees have a relationship with Narayan, so therefore they serve the Lord in Vaikuntha. But when the relationship gets more intimate, then we see they are manifest in the higher realms of the spiritual world. So any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, if you see Krishna manifested his pastimes on this planet, that was just over 5,000 years ago. And if you see the day of Brahma, it comes once in a day. Prior to that, people did have opportunity to know about Krishna's pastimes because it just manifested 5,000 years ago. And how would they attain Guru? Because as you said, his attributes in Narayan form
He's saying Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, and before that people were not aware of the Lord's pastimes. So what chance is there for them to go to Golok? My understanding is that the Vedas are eternal and Srimad Bhagavatam is also eternal. So these descriptions have to be there in the Vedas, but maybe not so much elaborated. So that opportunity is still there for those who can seek it. But I'm not really sure what's the answer to your question. Do you know?
Just a thought. On one side, that's actually there. That's actually there. Because Narayana is
here. Yeah. Yeah, so we have a special opportunity. We are quite blessed that we have we have got a human form after appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So though Krishna came 5,000 years ago, he conducted all his pastimes, he gave all that, but still, as Prabhu mentioned, we need Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shows how to develop love for Krishna, because though Krishna gave the process, but still people were unable to develop love for the Lord, specifically this highest aspect. So that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has exhibited. So for in previous yugas, the conclusion is that people didn't have much opportunity to go to Golok Vrindavan. It was Vaikuntha aspect here.
My comment is humorous. When you are talking about Vrindavan, I was thinking of Vrindavan. The whole Vrindavan depends. In Louis Vuitton, there are so many monkeys.
Well, the monkeys are not trying to sell anything. The monkeys are just... monkeys want to take away what you bought. Anything else?
The other point was,
yes, sir.
In verse 20, Srila Prabhupada has given a very good purport that it depends on the service to Lord Krishna.
Hmm.
He is sitting in the heart, in everybody's heart, so he knows every step, whatever your motivation. So he understands each and everything, why we are serving him. And he is very confused also. There is somebody has got motive. And of course, he fulfills your desires also, but in a way that it purifies the person. If you go to other demigods, they will give you whatever you want, but they will not clean your heart.
Yes.
And the other point is that when Krishna sits in your heart, it's just a light, like a dark light, so Andhakar cannot stay there. Krishna is just some Maya.
Andhakar.
So once we serve loving devotional service, transcendentally, then Krishna responded so nicely. He will give you everything.
Thank you. Yeah, if you can pay the price to the demigods, they'll give you what you've asked for. It's like you go to 7-Eleven and you put $20 on the counter and ask for Benson and Hedges, they'll give it to you. Though they know it's bad for you, because you can pay the price. So demigod worship is like that. Yes?
Ideally, what should be your motivation when you're serving the Lord?
Motivation should be when you're serving that I'm doing this for the pleasure of the Lord. So I'm doing it as a service, not to gain something out of it, either in the form of facility or respect or adoration or anything. So we just do it as a service, not thinking about ourselves. That should be the ideal motivation.
Even when you're serving, you might, you know, think that you want to go back to the Godhead. And that's that's a gain.
Okay. Well, those who are on the highest platform, those who are rendering pure devotional service, they are not even after the five kinds of liberation. So whether going back to Godhead or having a form as the Lord or same opulences as the Lord or association with the Lord, but still that is a bona fide desire. In a way it's a little bit selfish, but it's okay because you're trying to go back to Godhead. The whole idea is that the whole idea Krishna performs his pastimes is that to generate this desire that we go back to Godhead and serve him. So that kind of motivation is okay. But it's not the highest. So you see, like for example, the gopis, when they serve the Lord, there's no motivation at all. So they will do anything for the pleasure of the Lord. You know, there's that pastime where Krishna said, you know, I'm not feeling well. So I need that dust from my devotee's feet to put on my head, then my fever will go away and I'll be normal. So then Krishna approached some devotees and they were like, you know, we put the dust of our feet on our head, on your head, we'll go to hell. We can't do that, you know, that's a big offense. You can't put your feet on the Lord, on the Lord's head. It has to be the other way around. But then the gopis were approached and they said, yeah, we'll give you the feet from our dust, from the dust of our feet, and you can put it on your head, but we don't care whether we go to hell, as long as that pleases you. So in the highest level, whatever devotees do, they don't keep anything. There's no personal consideration. Yes.
And on the Prabhu's point, you made the point that since Krishna's pastimes are eternal, so the knowledge, Vedas, it has to be present. So it's a fact, because I was thinking regarding initial, just conversation, whatever interaction happened between Lord Brahma and the beginning of creation and the Supreme Lord, because even at that point, even at the beginning of the creation, see, or Lord allowed him to see first the Vaikuntha and after that Vrindavan. And he showed the Lord sometime in his 400 Narayan picture, and also showed him in the Gopal form. So even Lord Brahma in the beginning of creation, he had the understanding of Vrindavan, so that it is possible to know. But at the same time, it is not so common, but it is possible. And that shows that this is eternal and remaining in the beginning of creation.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it was not widely broadcast, but this knowledge was there in the Vedas for those who had expertise to extract it. Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
So it should be motivated by pure devotion. What about for us having got that pure devotion? Where should we start? What other motivations are acceptable?
Okay, so where should we start if we have selfish motivations? Is that what you're saying?
Most of us in the material world are coming from lots of people.
Of course, yeah.
And lots of people have different positions, whether that's a brother or a father or a husband. Is not the motivation of your wife, family and children somewhere to start?
Is not the motivation of your
wife, family and children? Are they not other motivations other than their own pure, unconditional motivations?
You mean looking after them?
Yes.
Yeah, that's acceptable, but it
using our position and our responsibilities.
Yeah, so our motivation will be to make them Krishna conscious. If that's our motivation, we raising a family, that we become Krishna conscious and our family becomes Krishna conscious, then that's a good motivation.
Just.
Yeah.
So if we struggle with pure motivations, it's quite acceptable to find them within our family and friends, within our position.
Pure motivations.
Well, be motivated to be a pure devotee so you can enlighten your family and friends, so you can encourage them to come home if you don't have the motivation to do it purely for yourself. It's very hard to have unconditional motivation in the material world. We all want something from it.
Yeah. Well, we can encourage them to render pure devotional service.
I'm using that as an example for ourselves, so we can use that. That if we have selfish rather than being ourselves and us wanting some reward can be for our friends. Am I not explaining myself properly? If I haven't got the motivation to be a pure devotee for myself, maybe I can find the motivation through my elderly mother who's dying and I want her to get some children.
Yeah, that's not a bad motivation, yeah. That's alright. But we can really have that motivation if we are pure ourselves.
Yeah, we have to start somewhere. We're all very contaminated.
Yeah. We can have that motivation for others, but to inspire them, we have to do it purely ourselves, because then they look at our example.
Yeah, the first journey starts with a step. I was just asking what steps, for example.
Well, what steps are... We have to take shelter of the association and of devotees and render service. That will actually purify us. So we have to take to the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Under rules and regulations, all the scriptures, under the guidance of a spiritual master. Then we can begin to render pure devotional service.
A lot of people start by serving the devotees for good.
Yeah, it starts there.
That makes them happy.
But it should.
Acceptable for people to please Lord Shri Krishna's devotees, even though their motivation may be the accolade to please them in the first place.
Yeah, you can please the devotees, but ultimately the Lord will be more pleased when we take shelter of the process of devotional service.
Of course.
Yeah, the way He's telling us. Of course, the Lord is pleased when we serve any Vaishnava, because Vaishnavas are very dear to the Lord. But to come to the platform of pure devotional service, we have to ultimately please spiritual master and endeavor to find one.
I'm
go in that path. Yeah.
Not too many people can start the aspirations of being there, and it helps that we have easy steps to take and other motivations that will allow us to purify ourselves and give those motivations to people. Because as you're saying, by serving That may not be an unselfish motivation to start with, but once we continue the devotion service, we will be purified.
Well, it's not really a pure motivation. I mean, it will be pure if we take full shelter of the process of devotional service. But it's a good motivation to start from. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.